palavras de Jorge, para que meus inimigos tenham mãos e não me toquem. Para que meus inimigos tenham pés e não me alcancem. Para que meus inimigos tenham olhos e não me vejam. E nem mesmo pensamento eles possam ter para me fazerem mal. Armas de fogo o meu corpo não alcançarão. Facas e espadas se quebrem sem o meu corpo tocar. Cordas e correntes arrebentem sem o meu corpo amarrar. Pois eu estou vestido com as roupas e as armas de Jorge. Jorge é de Capadócia.
Taxi driver, be my shrink for the hour. Leave the meter running. It's rush hour, so take the streets if you wanna. Just outrun the demons, could you? He said, Allahu Akbar. I told him, don't curse me.
Hello, everyone. It is Tuesday morning, 10.02 a.m., and you are listening to Swing Politics with Big Mitch on 91.5 FM WMFO, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Haven't been on in a couple of weeks. There have been technical difficulties, or I have been home. So I'm very happy to be back here as I finish up my final semester in college. And I believe there will be one more show after this. But there's a lot of good stuff to talk about, but I don't want to waste any time being sentimental. So let's just get right into what has been going on in politics recently. And what I'm going to start with today is an addition of recent things that have been going on that probably won't really matter in 2024. And some of these might surprise you. Let's get started with the first one. I'm sure many of you have heard about the TikTok ban that was passed by Congress a couple weeks ago. This was alongside the foreign aid bills that provided humanitarian aid to Gaza, support to Israel, and very vital support to Ukraine, which the Democratic Party has been lobbying for many months that the Republican majority in the House has stalled until basically they were forced to do so. And many are saying, oh, Speaker Johnson put country above party and could have just decided to block it all, but he ultimately decided to do it. And I don't know, why can't you do both? Why can't your party be the party of sanity and also pass good legislation? You can do both. The Republican Party has just decided not to. So I don't give him any credit for doing essentially the bare minimum. I think that's a good number one. But the TikTok ban that was passed recently won't matter in 2024, largely because the bill, first of all, states that the ban doesn't happen until 2025. Election is obviously November 2024, so doesn't really matter because it won't actually affect people when they're going to the polls. And if it doesn't immediately affect someone before they're going to the polls, then it doesn't matter for their vote. And even still, the TikTok ban, even though it is going to be banned in, I think, 8 months now or 7 months, it's still able to not be banned if another private corporation were to put together funds and purchase it from the government. Basically, the goal is that that TikTok is controlled by it's a Chinese the Chinese Communist Party, which is just the only political party in China, which has control over it and is able to sort of siphon off a lot of media information for them to understand, I guess, more about how sort of the politics and operations of other countries and individuals work to censor certain things, provide certain propaganda and the like, probably to destabilize. From what I've heard, they are not really interested in selling, that they'd rather it sort of that they'd rather TikTok fall apart than have someone then sell to someone. So I don't know how this is going to go. But if you're a country with an economy that's getting a little bit slowing down in China, then I think you'd be willing to sell a company worth some upwards of billions of dollars. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. But the TikTok ban does not impact the election results. That one is not even a probably. There's no way for it to impact the election results. So all the sort of bellyaching over that, the Biden administration is going to lose more with young voters. It's not going to be because of the TikTok bill. And it's not going to be because of something else. But I'll get to that in a moment. The second thing that probably won't matter in 2024 is that happened recently, is Biden's rescheduling of marijuana. The Biden administration is, I believe, undertaking steps to move marijuana from a Class 3 to a Class 1 drug, which is long overdue. And he has also been working, the administration has been working overtime to sort of expunge any marijuana-related crimes, especially on the federal level, I think. It's just something that is sort of a small action, but even though it is something small, it is meaningful for many lives, for many individuals. But again, rescheduling of marijuana is, again, a good thing, as it's not something that should obviously be categorized with heroin. Now, I believe 24 out of 50 states have decriminalized marijuana, or legalized it at the statewide level. And marijuana allows for a lot of tax revenue. That's something that Massachusetts has really fully employed, because if it's run by the state, then they're able to control it, so it's safer. People feel more comfortable with it, and they get a lot of tax revenue from it. So there's really not very much of a downside. And the rescheduling of marijuana is largely to sort of support to placate sort of young voters and bring them back into the fold with the Democratic Party and Biden. But young voters are voters that are always upset about everything, and so they'll just find something else to be upset about. I'm sure you all are wondering what that thing is that they're upset about, which we'll get to in a minute. But the rescheduling of marijuana is simply like a long-term good thing, but some people might say, oh, this will help with young voters and then the like, and maybe, but it's not going to have a significant enough effect that is going to like really, really change up the electoral scene come the next few months. Another thing that probably won't matter in 2024 are the small nuances in Trump's trial, essentially meaning that CNN and MSNBC, I don't know how often these days, but Fox News, they will put up coverage of the Trump trials or, speeches that Trump makes outside of the trial. I don't really know. But they'll be talking about the trial, and they'll have a panel of 8 people, especially CNN, to talk about what has gone on in the trial. And or little things that have been done, or Caitlin Collins will tweet out something about a specific witness that didn't know that he couldn't see Trump when he's on the stand, but he could see Trump's counsel. All these sort of nuanced things, while they're interesting and probably will, go down in a very well-recorded book, are not electorally significant. The only thing people really care about is, hey, the jury is deciding, and what's is it going to be convicted? Is he going to be convicted? Is he going to be acquitted? Is it going to be a hung jury? That's the only decision that matters. So, whether or not one witness said this or one said that, or maybe that improves the odds of sort of Trump's conviction, which I don't think any of it does personally. I think that the jury knows is pretty certain whether or not they want to convict or whether or not they want to acquit. But excuse me, it's early. Not really, but it's early for me, I guess, as a college student. But the small nuances in these trials, in this trial, is not important. It's just not. It's not going to make any difference. It's not going to change any voters' minds. But an acquittal or a conviction would. Finally, many of these, the TikTok ban and the rescheduling of marijuana, we've said, oh, this was, you know, maybe this will help with young voters and or hurt with young voters. And obviously, the biggest thing that's in the news right now that's all over is the protests, a large number of them anti-Semitic, unfortunately, on college campuses for the Israel-Hamas war in favor of, pro-Palestine, in many cases, pro-Hamas individuals collecting for to protest the Israeli government or to protest the U.S. government or to protest the Jewish people having a homeland. It's sort of all over the place. And really interestingly, I was just listening to a 538 podcast about young voters and whether or not this war will really motivate voters to not vote Biden, maybe as they did in 2020. And so the Israel-Hamas war is, in fact, something under recent things that probably won't matter in 2024 in November. And so the reason why is because polling has showed that even if you take the youngest voters, 18 to 29, which is sort of the standard group, if you take that voters and ask them what is the most important issue to them in the election, 70% of them will say the economy, and I think less than 5% of them will say the Israel-Hamas war. But that's not what you hear on the news. On the news, it's every single young voter is angry and upset with the Biden administration. He's losing so much support, it's unbelievable, and he's going to go down in flames because of the way that he handled this war. In my opinion, the way that this war has been handled, at least, you know, from the Biden administration, is that they have called out Bibi Netanyahu's government, which is pretty has done unspeakable things and is bad for the one Jewish people and two the Jewish state of Israel. So they've called out and made sure that there is sort of clear red lines with the Israeli U.S.'s government's support for Israel in many of these military actions. While at the same time also saying, hey, you can't be storming into a building and taking over and holding a food worker hostage like they did at Columbia. So this is an issue that, though it has a lot of airtime right now and is very much a hot button topic of discussion that many people are aware of at this point, it's not what actually drives voters. Now, do we trust the polls in head-to-heads? Maybe not. In this one, it's such an overwhelming choice of people that think the economy is more important or housing or healthcare is more important by 10, 20 times the number of people that feel that the Israel-Hamas war is their number one issue. Maybe it's something that young voters have sort of put in their total calculus of, am I going to support the Biden administration Biden for a second term? No, for a whole host of reasons, including the Israel-Hamas war. It's very possible. But quite frankly, all those young voters that maybe are not so much happy about that are not so happy about the Israel-Hamas war. There are three or four voters, maybe, that are consistent voters that are far more likely to go to the polls and approve of the Biden administration's handling of this issue. Because, as this very similar poll showed, that as college students, more so than even if you the 28 and 29 year olds in this you know age group, the college students, so 18 to say 22, have a 1/3 likelihood of turning out for an election to vote in a presidential election. And like the older part of that age group is 28, 29, they have a 50% chance. And the turnout rates continue to rise as the age increases. So if Biden is losing a handful of young voters but gaining older voters, that's a preferred trade-off in his electoral standpoint because old voters always vote and young voters do not vote nearly as much. So although it's very, very likely that Biden's margin among young voters will drop, which is, you know, unfortunate. Biden needs as many votes as he can get. It doesn't mean that it's sort of in a vacuum. It doesn't mean that because he's lost young voters, that's sort of it. All of these events are happening for all of the electorate. And much of the electorate, maybe they don't necessarily approve of the Biden administration's handling of this, but they probably know that the Trump administration wouldn't be any better on it. So while it might be a hot take, this 538 podcast, much of which the data that I sort of presented here, they first demonstrated on the show, although it seems like it's going to be the issue that young voters are going to leave the Democratic Party en masse because of, the reality is that it's not actually as much in the minds of almost all voters than it is in maybe 18 to 23-year-olds. It's something that people care about, and I think that there is sort of an important aspect to the sort of humanitarian rights aspect of this in terms of it's horrible what's happening to the Palestinian civilians. And every day we hope and pray that both Israelis and Palestinians are, safer than they were the day before. But speaking solely from how is Biden going to get elected and how are young voters going to tank his reelection bid because of the Israel-Hamas war, it's very likely if they didn't like Biden in the beginning, within the first 6 months maybe, they are not going to change their vote now. And maybe the small handful that did for that, Biden is picking up older voters because of his leadership in this respect. So there's a lot that goes on in a news cycle that they talk about that doesn't really matter, and it gets so lost. And it's really upsetting because there's a lot of things where they're important to sort of report on, like the passing of the TikTok ban with the foreign aid bills, like the rescheduling of marijuana, like Trump's trials a little bit. Doesn't need to be a 3-day news cycle extravaganza, like the Israel-Hamas war. These are things that should be reported on, but there are sort of more important things that should be reported on. Maybe I'll give you an example of some of Biden's accomplishments, which they never seem to talk about. Because if the news actually started to talk about Biden's accomplishments, voters would realize that Biden's getting stuff done. And then Biden would get reelected handily, but then the news media wouldn't have enough to cover. Then they want a horse race. We have to remember that with the polling, with the narrative, media wants a horse race. They want Trump back in office. Or if they don't have Trump back in office, they want him barely losing. This is their agenda. This is their very clear agenda that they do not want progress. They want profits. And so seemingly in this buried New York Times article that I really like dug through, sort of essentially not archives, it was from a couple days ago, but no one seemed to have noticed it or called it out. I didn't see it anywhere on social media. I didn't hear about it being spoken about on MSNBC or CNN or obviously Fox News. But this is an article about Biden's investments in Milwaukee, and I'll read a short clip for you of two paragraphs. Across Milwaukee, residents can see evidence of federal money from laws passed under the Biden administration, if they know where to look. It shows up in a growing array of solar panels near the airport, ramshackle houses rehabilitated and sold to first-time buyers, the removal of lead paint and pipes, the demolition of a derelict mall, a crime lab and emergency management center, a clinic and food pantry for people with HIV, funding to help dozens of nonprofits provide services like violence prevention efforts and other after-school programs. But of the more than $1 billion from Milwaukee County in the American Rescue Plan Act, the Infrastructure and Investment and Jobs Act, and the Inflation Reduction Act, legislation that President Biden counts among his greatest accomplishments, much is harder to see, like funds to prevent drastic cuts to public safety during the pandemic. Some money has yet to be spent, like $3.5 million to rebuild the penguin exhibit at the local zoo and $5.1 million to repair the roof of Milwaukee Mitchell International Airport. So all those things that I listed, solar airports, rehabilitation of houses sold to first-time buyers, demolition of derelict locations, emergency management center, food pantry, nonprofit for violence, investment in an international airport repair. I mean, you can't list off accomplishments like this in any other administration except for maybe LBJ, who effectively introduced to us Medicare, Medicaid, Great Society expansion, Voting Rights Act, Civil Rights Act. I mean, though those are of a greater caliber. These are of a more on the day-to-day appearance of the country. But it's funny. It's not, you know, the Biden administration is hoping voters will see it. Yes, of course. But no one's reporting on it. How are voters supposed to see what's going on or hear about what's going on if the news doesn't cover it? I mean, it's very possible that local news sources are covering and in Milwaukee are covering these improvements. And I hope that they are, because they are really very much important. Something that wasn't accomplished under the Trump administration at all. And certainly wasn't accomplished under the Obama administration either. And don't even get me started on Bush. So to say that Biden, one, is ineffectual and old and has done nothing and he is terrible and he's the same as Trump is just woefully inaccurate. You can't list all of these things. You can't go through a huge COVID recovery bill of $1.9 trillion, an expansion of green energy unlike this country has ever seen before. It's so important that you know that U.S. greenhouse gas emissions are at the lowest point since 1913. That's over a century ago. What is it? 111 years. That's how much emissions have come down under the Biden administration. If you're a young person and you are saying that the Biden administration is doing nothing and that Trump would be just as good, you are wrong. You're hurting your own interests. And that's often what these young progressive, leftist people do, is they fight against their own interests because good is not good enough. It has to be perfect. And if it's perfect, I want perfect or I want nothing. I mean, we've heard reports of young voters saying that they would rather take a step back into the Trump administration again and maybe have a brighter future than have a consistently good future for everyone under Biden and under Democrats. That's selfish. And it's also shocking and ignorant of the reality of the situation, which is that the infrastructure week that Trump had been talking about for 4 years in his presidency, Biden was able to get done. Under bipartisan numbers, it passed with 65 votes in the Senate. You try getting 65 votes when you have a one seat majority with the Republican Party that is effectively ready to burn the whole Democratic system down. Obama couldn't get that done. Trump couldn't obviously get that done, but Joe Biden could. So all of these things, all of these accomplishments from the Biden administration just get no airtime. And, you know, it's not because the Biden administration won't try. Their messaging is very strong. Their comms team knows exactly what they're doing. And, the argument that Democrats are bad at getting their message out and they don't know what they're doing is simply wrong. The problem is that you have a media source, a media base, essentially, that likes to do both sidesism. It's very easy to do both sidesism. Oh, Biden is, you know, sort of saying that college protesters shouldn't be anti-Semitic or be violent. But at the same time, Donald Trump is in the court with 91 indictments, but we're going to treat both these things as the same. Joe Biden had a little gaffe recently, and that's going to be treated the same as Donald Trump, who sexually assaulted women and who tried to overthrow the U.S. government. Like, are people not understanding the reality of this situation, which is that there is one president who has passed landmark legislation that is once in a lifetime and really effective, and that we're facing some economic sort of pressures, which are not great, but they're better than they have been in previous years. And you have then, on the other hand, a former president who was active in wanting to overthrow the government, install a coup. And beyond that, from a policy point, he got nothing passed other than tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy, which, by the way, as an FYI, that bill will sunset in 2025. So those tax cuts will very, very likely be gone relatively soon, especially if Trump doesn't win re-election. That was the only thing that he did, and stacked the Supreme Court. So he banned Roe v. Wade. He banned abortion in a number of states. Those are the legacies of the two. But it is the opinion of CNN to equate them, to handle Trump with kitty gloves, and to constantly use the Biden administration as a punching bag, because they like it to be equal, and they like the both sides of the same narrative. As someone who sees what the Biden administration does day in and day out, with gun safety, with environmental legislation protections, with greater inclusivity of peoples, everything that the Biden administration does is an unbelievable step forward for the country. And the only reason why he's not getting the credit that's due is because he's old or older. When we have a president in place, it's not the president that makes every single decision always forever. It is the bureaucracy and a team of experts and his cabinet that make professional recommendations, which he listens to. Under Trump, during COVID, he was simply talking over the experts just to make himself and his administration not look as bad. It's quite frankly unbelievable to try to equate the two of these. And make no mistake, it is not the Trump campaign that's doing that. It's not the Biden administration that's doing that. It's not a lack of communications from the Democrats on what they've passed. They've been doing it, and they will do it, especially when the Biden team will flood the airwaves with ads. But it is largely a result of mainstream media wanting to see a horse race between Donald Trump and Joe Biden and treating them as the same. Oh, they're both so equally unfavorable. They're both approved of in such unequal ways. It's the lowest interest election ever. Well, why do you think that is? Is there something to be said for them both being old candidates? Yes. But is there also something to be said for one of them being the most progressive, the most legislatively successful president in the modern history of this country? CNN doesn't seem to want to talk about it. So when we are criticizing the Biden administration again, which is something that I think we should do, there's always things that they can improve upon. We have to really keep in mind the fact of what you're comparing it against and what the stakes are. Because there is so much, there is an unbelievable amount on the line this election. And so let's look at sort of in this election, based on a recent election result, where they are both losing their support. And it's pretty clear cut. So I'm going to look at the Pennsylvania primary here, which was, I believe, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Now, in the primary, both Biden and Trump there's no one running against them anymore, not in a formal sense. However, there are still candidates on the ballot for both the Republican and Democratic primary. So if we start with the Republican primary, it was Donald Trump versus Nikki Haley. Those were the only two that were on the ballot. Haley dropped out before they started sending out mail-in votes. So Haley has not been in the minds of any voters at all in this primary. Pennsylvania also has closed primaries, which means that only Republicans can vote in the Republican primary. In this primary, Donald Trump won 83.4% of the vote, and Nikki Haley won 16.6% of the vote. Now, again, I'll say, Nikki Haley was not running even when the earliest ballots were sent out. She had dropped out at that point, which means these voters knowingly voted for a candidate that was not running for office. And she got one in, what, you could say 17 in 100 voters in this primary, which is like a big deal. That's huge to have almost one in five voters be against your candidacy in a primary. And of course, the question is sort of where was Trump's greatest weakness? Interestingly, and not surprisingly in the slightest, it was from the suburbs, most notably Chester County, Montgomery County, Bucks County. These are the three major collar counties. Collar, C-O-L-L-A-R, counties of Philadelphia. And Trump's support obviously was higher in sort of the rural areas, but in Philadelphia he sort of had a little bit less support than sort of he did statewide. But the reality of the situation is that one in four voters, at least in Montgomery County and in Chester County, voted against Trump and voted for Nikki Haley. It's very likely that some of these Republicans are ancestral Republicans, and when I say that, I mean that they vote Republican, they voted Republican for a long time in the past, and maybe they only started considering voting Democratic in 2016 with Trump. And in 2020, they were very, very likely Biden voters. And so they're still registered as Republicans because they're sort of hoping the Republican Party will come back, and they're registering a protest vote against Donald Trump. Now, this isn't universal. Some Republicans might truly have voted for Trump in 2020, and now they really don't like Trump and the Republican Party anymore, and they might be gung-ho Biden voters or reluctant Biden voters that want to register some sort of protest against Donald Trump by voting for Nikki Haley. But the results, one way or another, are clear in that he is not popular in the suburbs. The suburbs are going to be Trump's main issue. That's going to be a really, really major problem for him. Biden, on the other hand, turning to the Democratic primary, won 87.9% of the Democratic primary vote in Pennsylvania. So he performed around 3 to 4 points better than Trump did in his Republican primary. That's good news. And not only that, Biden in the Democratic primary, shockingly, and I didn't even notice this, drew in 125,000 more voters than the Republican primary, totaling 950,000 voters, and Democratic primary totaling 1,075,000 voters. It's really funny now how the party that turns out under these sort of not important small elections, like a primary where it's uncontested, is the Democratic Party. Democratic Party base now is people that turn out always, consistently. It's really very funny. And if you look at the collar counties that Trump struggled in, that he got 75% in, Biden was getting upwards of 90%. So the people on the ballot next to Biden, you would say, oh, 88% is not great if you're running against no one. Dean Phillips was on the ballot, and then there were write-ins. And write-ins was obviously an effort for uncommitted young voters for the Israel-Gaza war. And excuse me, that Dean Phillips and the total write-ins running against Biden got a fewer number of votes than Nikki Haley did. They got around 130,000 versus Nikki Haley's 160,000. And a lot of Dean Phillips voters are very likely going to support Joe Biden, but also Dean Phillips voters are likely in the areas that are more rural. So in rural areas in Pennsylvania, on the flip side of the ancestral Republicans in suburban areas, in the rural areas, you have ancestral Democratic voters. These are voters that voted for the Democratic Party for so long. Their grandfather and their great-grandfather and his father before him, all these people, generations and generations, always voted for Democrats, and they were rural. And they're finally starting to switch sort of who they're voting for, Republicans, generally probably in 2012, 2016. And so these voters are still registered as Democrats, and they don't vote like Democrats. But a lot of these voters that are Democrats voted for Trump in 2020 and voted for Republicans, up and down the ballot. And so if we do look at some of the rural areas, that's where Biden saw his biggest defections. In these rural areas, he was getting more like 80% of the vote compared to the 90, 92, 93 in the collar counties. He was getting, 80% in Clarion County, 85% in Bradford, 78% in Huntington. Like, these are counties that are very rural. They have small populations, and they showed a significant amount of defection. And that's largely because there are Democratic voters, there are Republican voters, or Trump voters, who are registered as Democrats still because they haven't changed their registration. So that can be misleading. And that's, I think, a really important thing to note here. Now, the question of where did Biden perform the worst? So if he averaged around 88% in the state, his greatest issues were in beyond rural counties, were in urban counties. Philadelphia County, he got 85% of the vote. And 10% of the vote were write-ins, 5% were Dean Phillips. So, again, 85% is not terrible. A lot of this is going to come down to turnout. It's going to turn out. It's going to be whether or not the Biden campaign can really get people to move to motivate. I think the Trump campaign is going to be a very similar argument, and we'll get to that in a moment. But look, of what I'm looking at, it's the rurals, which makes the most sense. There's sort of a rational reason behind that, where sort of any Democrat would perform like that way, would perform weaker in the rural areas. But a bigger caution sign to the Biden administration, or the Biden campaign, I should say, is that their weakness was more so in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, where in Philadelphia they got 85%, and in the Pittsburgh county they got 86%. And so Biden's weaknesses are not crazy apparent with maybe minority voters, so black voters and Hispanic voters. They might not be sort of overwhelmingly negative and hemorrhaging a lot of support in the Biden campaign, but it's clear that they need to put in their work there. That the suburbs are very strong for Biden. Of course, he should spend money there. He should spend time there. But at the same time, the urban centers are where he's losing the most support. And so those are the places where you need to go for the campaign events. Whereas for Trump, he's going to, barnstorm the suburbs or really get his people out on the rural scale. So, look, I think that this primary result in and of itself is a very good sign for Biden, like, his weaknesses in urban counties are not as strong as Trump's are in suburban counties. And while you could say that, oh, the populations aren't quite the same, the combination of all of the collar counties is the same population as Philly, if not more. So the work that Trump needs to put in is definitely, in my opinion, greater than the Biden administration. But look, the Biden administration has the capacity and the funds, and that's something that we'll get to in a minute. Because we always talk about fundraising on the show. It's so funny. But this poll, to me, says the Biden campaign is in a good spot and they need to keep pushing, but they're in a stronger position than maybe the polls would tell them, which is what I'll get to in a moment. The polls, are finding that there's many extreme swings against the Biden administration, particularly among young voters. It's so extreme that Trump is leading with young voters, and that if that were the case, there would be a realignment of a national scale beyond the likes of any political realignment we've seen in the past. And essentially, a lot of the polls are finding that Trump is in the lead. Trump's average in 538 is he's leading by one. And sort of the Trump is also leading in swing states, more than the fact that he's leading by 1 point nationally. He's leading in swing states in the Rust Belt by maybe 2 points, and he's leading in the Sun Belt by 4 or 5 points. That's not a winning that's not a recipe for success for the Biden campaign this cycle. They need to be winning. And I'm sort of the first to say these polls are strange, and I don't know if I quite frankly believe them yet. But personally, I prefer looking at election results than polls. And I think in the aggregate, they are accurate, which is the unfortunate part. Split Ticket, which is they do a lot of political analysis. They're a really great site. They do sort of specific, polling analysis and methodological deep dives into certain dynamics of the electoral political world. Split Ticket says that the historical inaccuracy of polls at this point, at this sort of date before the election, is around 4 points. So if Trump's leading by one, Biden could win the popular vote by anywhere to three, and Trump could win it anywhere to 7 points, and anywhere in that range, it was within sort of like the almost modal outcome, you could say. That's really bad news, if that is the case, because if Trump's leading by 1 point and Biden can only win at max by the national popular vote by 3%, that's going to be either one, a very, very narrow Biden win, or a very narrow Trump win. And the margin of error for Biden there is extraordinarily slim, at least according to historical standards. Is this a normal election? I don't know. I'm not the one to tell you that. But the inaccuracy of polls is very strong at this point. It is around 4% at this point, almost consistently into the election. So that's, if you're the Biden campaign, that's not good. That's not something you want to be seeing with the polls showing you consistently down. Do we believe it? Different story. And in that sense, there's a counterpoint in this NBC poll that the voters that voted in 2020 and 2022 will vote for Biden, or are Biden plus nine in 2024. It's from an NBC poll. And those that voted in neither election, neither 2020 nor 2022, are Trump plus 22. And there's the lowest interest in this election cycle that there's been in the past five election cycles. I think it's at somewhere around 60%, whereas it's around 70% normally. Under these circumstances, Biden should win. So it's very hard to look at all this information and sort of read the tea leaves and understand what's going on. And the reason why, in this case, Biden should win is that the Democratic Party is now made up of high propensity voters. These are voters that are educated and are aware of when all the elections are happening. If they didn't vote in 2020, they're probably not going to vote in 2024. Trump's voters were crawling across beds of nails and hot coals to vote for Trump in 2020. And Democrats, on the other hand, were hesitant to vote for Biden. I think they were enthusiastic to vote for Biden. Biden was largely approved up in 2020. He was maybe not the strongest candidate, but he was very widely approved of, and people really, really did expect the 2020 election to be a landslide. And when it wasn't, we were shocked. We were looking at Texas going blue. We were looking at Democrats winning a Senate seat in Kansas. I mean, it was unbelievable how much we thought Democrats were going to sweep in 2020, and they fell flat on their faces. So why would an election with lower interest mean that Biden would perform better? Well, if interest is lower and Biden has voters that always turn out, then the Democratic Party has voters that always turn out. And the voters that don't frequently turn out and are not as reliable to turn out are now with the Republican side. To me, that spells success for Biden. It's weird because the Democratic Party up until probably 2020 was the party of, if we get the turnout high enough, we'll win. And that is no longer the case, which is crazy to me. It's unbelievable because that's been the standard for the Democratic Party since Gore, since 2000. That the Democratic Party will only win if they get the greatest turnout. And that's not true anymore. So it's definitely a very interesting dynamic that we're seeing between these different types of voters. And if I were to pick a side, which is shocking because he's not leading in the polls, I'd prefer to be Biden. I know that my voters will turn out consistently. Because why would someone who is so dedicated to turn out for Trump in 2020, someone that would not have turned out for Trump in 2020, because Republican voters didn't really care about COVID in 2020. It wasn't a thing because Trump politicized it. It was not a thing that they were worried about when they were going to the polls, whereas Democrats were really worried about it. And there's a really good argument for the fact that very likely older voters didn't go to the polls or maybe used an absentee ballot, which was a little bit more sort of not necessarily janky, but like not almost as reliable and a greater odds of it being rejected. Why would they feel the need to sort of risk their life just for an election? It's not a theory that I have proven, but in my mind, it's something that the fact that COVID is not going to happen this year, we can hope and pray that it will not negatively affect the Biden campaign as much as it did in 2020, which is a theory that I don't see thrown around a lot, but it's very, very possible. And I also would like to point out, though, that, you know, one of these polls says it's really bad for Biden and the margin of error and all that stuff, and young voters are leaving the party en masse. And in another poll that, hey, you know, Biden's high propensity voters will pull him over the finish line. Another poll showed that among group that voted for Biden 48-43 in 2020, they now prefer Trump 46-44. And if Kennedy is in the mix, then they prefer Biden 39-37. But 47% to 46% prefer a Republican Congress. Basically, all this data is to tell you, and all this sort of weird numbers that I'm throwing at you, is to say that the polls are really noisy. And in my opinion, they were really off in 2020. And we have another weird Trump scenario where you never know what the polls are going to do. In aggregate, yes, I need to, unfortunately, sort of force myself to believe them. Because in my opinion, we can't assume that the Biden campaign is going to suddenly make the polls turn around and going to, you know, win this election. I personally think that he is going to come November. But if the election were held today, he would not win. And I think the important part to also note here is that because Biden is down in the polls, it will make Democrats more motivated. It's very, very possible, and that along with sort of the COVID theory, polls were over-registering Democrats. And because of that, Democrats didn't feel the need to turn out. Oh, Trump's going to lose anyway. It's going to be a landslide. There's no way he's going to get reelected. And suddenly it's a super close election. I don't think that Democrats are going to make that mistake again. it's not necessarily, again, a proven theory, but it's very possible that, I mean, I know that I was seeing Biden plus a week before the election, a Marquette poll showed Biden plus 17 in Wisconsin, and he ended up winning the state by less than a point. So it is definitely possible that without COVID and with the polls showing Biden down, that Democrats will be more likely to turn out and prevent Trump from getting a second term. I also think that we have to look at the other things in the picture here, specifically fundraising numbers. Biden's doing better than Trump. Specifically, Biden in quarter one, which is what, January to the beginning of April, surpassed the number of small money donors that Trump was receiving. Because that's really impressive, because small money donors were the base of Trump's campaign in 2020. He was very notable in 2016 and 2020 for almost like replicating that Obama sense of being able to pull in donations from everywhere, because he was a really invigorating figure that the Republican Party really got behind. A very, very interesting thing to note is that special elections, taking legislative and congressional special elections, which I've spoken about before, taking them in aggregate in the past has been historically fairly representative of what the electorate is going to look like come election day. And with I believe New York's 22nd or 21st congressional district holding their election last Tuesday, the Democrat won by an overwhelming majority. And now the special elections in aggregate predict an environment of D plus 4.7%, which is more blue than the environment was in 2020. So the special election aggregates, not the polling, tells us, hey, Democrats are doing better than they did in 2020 right now. Who knows if this is going to be maintained, but as of right now, that's the case. Kennedy is also very much a wild card in this election, because we have no idea who he's going to siphon votes from. In some polls, he pulls a little bit more from Trump. In some polls, he pulls a little bit more from Biden. We really don't know. And that's a very important, tangible wild card to focus on. And I think that the Biden administration and the DNC is ramping up their operations against him to try to paint him in the light of a right-wing anti-vaxxer type of guy, because when they do, it's proven that when they do increase the saliency of the Kennedy campaign, of his candidacy, Democrats are more turned off by him and Republicans are more inclined to vote for him than maybe they would Trump. So to me, that says that the Kennedy campaign can be a further spoiler for the Trump campaign. And the Biden team can really, really emphasize that. So that's another opportunity that could be in favor of either side. Trials, just from a tangible viewpoint, are going to keep Trump off the campaign trail for as long as that is. Trump's biggest strength is when he's campaigning. It also provides some gaffes for the Biden campaign to use, but Trump is very much hindered by the fact that he is not on the campaign trail, and that is going to continue for some months, which is a big deal. And I think, in my opinion, one of the biggest things and an underrated aspect of Biden's strength here that is not being picked up by the polls is the ground game of the campaign. The campaign has over 100 full-time staffers or something like that across maybe 50 field offices across the seven competitive swing states. So Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, and then I believe he's throwing in Florida, which I think is a mistake, but it's never good to sort of broadcast that you're shrinking your electoral map. But Biden has a crazy number of field offices right now preparing to really get going, especially after Labor Day. Trump has zero. There is not a single field office that Trump has. And so I'd say the one thing, and I think that field offices are something that's really underrated, and I think they really helped the Obama administration or the Obama campaign win in 2012, and of course 2008, but 2012 was sort of a neck and neck polling, and then Obama really, really performed well in the 2012 election. But the one thing that I would say that Trump has going for him, and will very likely have going for him, is the fact that he gets to choose a new VP, which will just be able to bring in a new fold. And apparently, according to recent reporting, which I don't know if this is entirely the case, but there are five options. Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, which is an interesting choice, Governor Doug Burgum of North Dakota, which is sort of crazy coming out of nowhere, and Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio, who is a freshman senator, and Representative Elise Stefanik. Kristi Noem, after she killed her dog, is out of the running for sure. So, in my opinion, a lot of these are very good choices. I believe that Scott, Rubio, or Stefanik are all strong. Burgum is a good choice for okay choice because he pulls in moderates and he has money. And Vance is a terrible choice because Trump just doesn't need to bring Vance onto his ticket. It's not someone that brings anything for Trump's sort of electoral presentation to the crowd. And we'll talk more about that, I think, in the future. But the fact that he has options which will improve his ticket among whether it be African-American voters with Senator Scott, Hispanic voters with Senator Rubio, and sort of moderates, I would say, with the two of them as well. Burgum with getting more money because he's worth $1.1 billion dollars or something. Stefanik with appealing to sort of the moderate abortion sense, even though she's rabidly pro, anti-abortion. They're all options that I think are unfortunately strong choices for the Trump administration or for the Trump campaign. And so that's definitely the ace in the hole for him. And he could end up throwing out all these options and choosing someone else, which might also be a good choice. We don't know, but that is a very tangible positive for the Trump administration, for the Trump campaign. And we'll see how that sort of plays out in the coming weeks. So I hope you have all enjoyed today's show. I definitely have. It's been a lot of fun for me. Most people do not find talking about politics fun, but you know that I can go on a radio show for an hour and proceed to talk nonstop because it's what I love. And I hope to be here next week. I hope my ID will let me in. But to close out, this has been Mitch Saunders, Big Mitch, with listening to Swing Politics, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in, and have a great rest of your Tuesday.
WMFO in Medford.